Good evening. I call the February 11th regular meeting of the Board of Directors to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready to begin.
I
pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving on to item three, roll call of the Board of Directors. Director Campana is asking permission from the board to participate remotely. So are we okay with her participating remotely?
It's
Okay. Well, we'll now have a roll call of the Board of Directors. Vanessa?
Director Trevino?
Present.
Director Chavez?
Present.
Director Santana?
Present.
And are you alone in the room or anyone over 18 in the room with you?
Alone.
Vice President Pinello?
Here.
President Garcia?
Here. All right, a quorum is present. So the next item is adoption of the agenda. Are there any changes?
The move.
Second.
All right, well, we got the motion and the second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
We can do a roll call vote.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, roll call, Vanessa.
Well, although it should be roll call for this.
Oh, got it.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Chavez?
Aye.
Director Santana?
Aye.
Vice President Fellow?
Aye.
President Garcia?
Aye. All right, the motion passes on a 5-0 vote. We'll now open public comment. Vanessa, do we have any public comment?
Good afternoon, Madam President. We have not received any written public comments prior to this meeting. However, if anyone wishes to speak now, they may do so at the podium.
And also, if we could check online whether any members of the public that wish to...
At this time, we do not have any members of the public online.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing none, public comment is now closed. Moving on to number six, committee reports. They are concluded in this packet. Would any director like to add to these reports? Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda is consent calendar. Would any director like to pull any item off the consent calendar for discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. A roll call vote, Melissa.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Chavez?
Aye.
Director Santana?
Aye.
Vice President Bello?
Aye.
President Garcia?
Aye. The motion passes on a 5-0 vote. Moving on to action and presentation items. Item 8A, SB 707 Ethics Overview. Tom?
Yeah, so I'll introduce this topic. So every 2 years, you get the authority to have 2 hours of ethics training in order to be in compliance with the law.
You might hear my friend.
What we have been done, so these courses are available at ACLA conferences and other locations. The directors are free to use those as for your ethics training. But we have asked our attorney in the past, and that's what we're doing today, to make periodic presentations to the board on the topic of ethics and Brown Act compliance, etc. And you know, we're not going to do full 2 hours today, but within the 2 year period, we want to give the directors an opportunity to receive that 2 hours of ethics training. So Martin's got a presentation today. He'll go through, it'll include updates of recent changes in the law. I think you're going to talk about social media again,
right?
Several other topics. So I'll turn it over to Martin.
Question. Does this then comply with our requirement? Are we doing it in increments, like 50 minutes until we get to 2 hours, or this is just an addition to?
Our intent is for it to be in compliance. There are no provisions that allow for segmented presentations, but there are also no provisions that prohibit it. Yeah. So we will do half-hour increments 4 times during the year or a couple of years. And also one of the new requirements, and we'll cover it briefly, is both for department heads as well as the directors, is a financial, 2 hour financial responsibility training, which
Will that meet the requirements for us to?
This will not. No, this does not have anything to do with financial. And this law is brand new. I'm sure there will be consultants and courses that will be available for that. But then most likely will be more related to CPA type of persons rather than attorney type of persons.
So the directors are now required to undergo ethics training, which we're taking care of in this method. You've been under a requirement to undergo harassment training. Is that what it's called, Vanessa? Every 2 years as well?
Harassment prevention to be
thank you. What's the matter? And the new requirement is for 2 hours of financial training. Vanessa did send to you, there are two training events coming up, one in March, which is online, and then one in June, which is in person in Orange County. So if you don't remember getting those, check with Vanessa. You have 2 years to complete that training, but we want to let you know when the opportunities are to join a webinar or an in-person event to receive that financial training.
And I wouldn't be shocked if Aqua had something to meet that. Yeah. So in the upcoming meetings, whether it's this year in Sacramento or next year, that probably will also be available.
So, if I could just add one more before we start. So long as staff is proactive in terms of keeping track of this, because sometimes we might not know if we, adhere to the requirements or we miss a meeting or something like this. I definitely want to be apprised to anything like that because I don't want to out of compliance.
Right. Yeah. Our intention from my standpoint, our firm's intention, and I'm sure Tom concurs, sure, is after the 4 half-hour meetings, we will issue a certificate that says that 2 hours were completed segmentally.
Yes. And Director Chavez, you're absolutely right. If a director doesn't attend, it doesn't count if you're not attending this meeting.
Right.
So we need to keep track of that. So we do keep track of the training requirements and when those updates are due. I think the directors are pretty good on ethics. I think the harassment prevention training, a few of you are getting close. But we'll make sure you're aware of that and find opportunities for you to comply with that training.
We do have, I put on a 2-hour presentation if we want to commit a meeting to it, but if you prefer to do it personally and online fashion or some type of a webinar that's being offered, obviously that's also available. Sitting here for 2 hours listening to me might not be the most enjoyable way to spend time. So, but it is available if needed.
Would you do like an Aqua Region 8, 9, and 10 presentation? What it would cost, I'm sure, individually for the directors of...
If we were to...
For Ventura, to deal with Ventura and LA counties, would you be willing to do a seminar for all of the directors in LA and Ventura?
Well, those that attend an Aqua, so it would be an Aqua Region 8 event where the topic would be a presentation, I think is what you're asking.
Yeah. I would certainly consider that. I have to check with my partners, and I don't think there is there's no preclusion for me presenting to non-clients, but I would want to double check that.
There are presenters who do this all the time. That's kind of their job, is to present this training. That would probably be more
appropriate. More appropriate. And probably cheaper, frankly.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mark.
Thank you. All right. The agenda. Ethics refreshers, we're going to talk a little bit about the new laws, including SB 707 regarding open meetings, as well as some social media rules. Next slide, please. There are 4 groups of ethic laws: personal financial gain, personal advantages, perks, obviously governmental transparency. Term open government is a catchphrase, but it does govern how we conduct our business, the access to the documents that are public, that are produced in the business of the district. That all is part of the transparency.
So can we ask questions in between before?
You may ask questions, if that's okay with the president. How would you like to run this? Or you want to save questions to the end? You want to have them?
I think that would be the most timely thing. So we can go as we go.
As we go.
That's fine.
Thank you.
What, questions? Okay, on personal financial gains, I don't know if you're going to go into detail about this.
Mm-hmm.
You are?
I am.
Okay, so let me just shorten my question. Because when I was on the city council, it was also a concern of not only personal financial gain, but also personal financial loss.
That's correct.
That you can...
Yeah, it's financial interest is the proper word. Gain is probably not the exactly right word for the bullet point.
Okay.
But I'll try to cover that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. examples of laws, again, these are so basic, but the courses required to go through them, they're part of the compliances that we talk about all these. Bribery, obviously, getting paid for votes or representation or positions. The financial interest disqualification laws are fairly complicated, but they're important, and they are a hot topic for anyone who's trying to catch somebody, for lack of a better word, in some situation. My advice has always been ask for permission, not forgiveness. So if there's any question with regard to an item or anything that is related potentially to your finances or your family finances, pick up the phone and call me. I tell you that I think you should obtain an attorney who represents you, since I don't represent you, that may be a signal that you should think about what's happening. I'm the district council. In my role, I will talk to you about what the law is and what my interpretation of that law is. But as far as giving you personal advice on the situation, that is not part of my role, and I would be stepping way out of bounds if I did that. But I will advise you that you can potentially discuss something with your own attorney if necessary in those circumstances. Revolving door restrictions, we'll get into those in greater detail, but basically once you leave the dais, you're precluded from representing interest in front of the board for a year. Okay. In more detail, basically conferring a benefit to a public official to influence a vote, opinion, etc. We've gone through this. Penalties are great financially, criminally. It is amazing, and I don't have the detailed cases in this presentation because we're doing it briefly. But you would think that people would learn, I guess, but it keeps happening over and over again. People are selling their votes, they're stealing money. People who have been entrusted with a position of representing people, whether that's on the city council or on a district board, they take advantage of being in a public office. Public office is not a place where you gain something. It is a place where you give something. So being in this seat is not a benefit to you. Being in this seat should be a benefit to the public from you. And unfortunately, still a number of people keep forgetting about that. I was a city attorney for City of Moreno Valley for a number of years, and we had a city council member, Mr. Coe, who is public knowledge. Actually, when I was hired, he was already doing 5 years for taking a bribe. He was set up by FBI. It's the largest monetary bribe ever accepted by a public official. And there's a tape, famous tape of him sitting in a hotel room playing with the money. It's insane. It's just, you wonder, well, anyway.
We had a Met director go to jail.
Hmm?
Orange County. We had a Met director from Orange County go to jail.
Yeah. This is not an opportunity to benefit. This is an opportunity to serve, being in these positions. And unfortunately, sometimes that's forgotten. Extortion, getting something from somebody by threatening to do something. These are crimes that are in existence and are obviously crimes, and this should not be something that is being done well at all, but especially not in a public office. Rewards for appointing someone to public office, again, this is probably a little less applicable in our situation, but there are situations where city councils or board supervisors or officials have an opportunity to appoint people to various positions, and they do it in exchange for money or other things of benefit to them. Embezzlement is simply being in possession of property that doesn't belong to you. You're bailee. You're entrusted with that property, and you take it and keep it for yourself or for other reasons not related to the reason why you have the property in the first place. Financial interests. You may not participate in the decision if financial interests are affected by the decision. Material effect, again, distinguishable from public generally. We'll cover that in a little bit more detail. And the effect can be, as Director noted, positive or negative. It does not necessarily have to be only a gain. And again, conflict does not occur just because you're passionate about an issue or dislike a certain policy. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But as long as you provide an opportunity for a fair hearing, conflict does exist if your decision has the potential of making you money, your family money, or reverse costing you money, be, I don't know, tax write-offs or some other potential reasons why somebody would get involved in that, but they're prohibited. Either one of those is.
And Martin, I think a point needs to be made. So if the public in general gets the same advantage that you get, that is not a conflict. So is that correct? So if you own stock in Edison and you're voting on a contract with Edison, everyone who owns stock in Edison gets the benefit. That's not a conflict.
That's not a conflict. We'll cover that a bit more in greater detail. It's, for our purposes, it's usually measured by the service population that the district serves. Disqualification versus abstention. Disqualification or stepping down is if you do have a conflict, you're required to step down. It is legally required. Abstention is voluntary. I haven't done this for almost 40 years now. Oh, that's scary. I'm not in favor of abstentions. I think that legally, there are very, very few reasons for somebody to abstain from voting. People who serve in public offices have been elected to make decisions. They're there to take up issues and decide and make decisions. And unfortunately, I've seen a lot of abstentions because somebody didn't want to piss off one side or the other, very frankly. They would rather not vote that vote than upset somebody with the vote. So I think that's kind of a little bit of a cop-out, I guess. Again, abstention is voluntary if you do choose to abstain. By the way, and I mentioned that because I see it often, you are not required to abstain from voting on the minutes of a meeting that you didn't attend. I see that often. Public officials often do that. I wasn't there. Someone abstained from voting. Okay. Legally, you're not required to do that. Your vote is a vote of trust in the secretary. You're not a editor as to what happened or didn't happen. But that's just an aside. what kind of interest has to be reasonably foreseeable. So that interest needs to be something that is identifiable. It does have to have a material effect, and we'll cover that, what that means monetarily. It has to have reasonably foreseeable the decision will have a material effect on you or your immediate family or on a source of income to you. I've had public official excuse himself from disqualifying himself from voting. They owned a lumber yard in the city, big lumber yard, and the project that was coming before them in the city, if it passed, would have been a very, very beneficial item to them. And even though this was a business, and you know, he just stepped down. I don't want any part of it. And I think that's smart. Certainty is not required. In other words, if it's reasonably foreseeable that it'll have a financial effect, you do need to recuse yourself and step down. It doesn't have to be 100% certain. And kind of interest, the source of income, the $500 rule, receiving $500 more in income from one source, business, nonprofit, agency, individual within 12 months prior to the decision creates an economic interest. Family income, it's your closest family, parents, child. Also loans and guarantors. A loan from someone, a guarantee on a loan can create economic interest unless the loan is from a commercial institution. If they're in the business of lending and you're just one of their customers, but it's made in a regular course of business. And again, it's available under the same terms as the public. Now, if Rocket Mortgage gives you a break by 2% over, what they generally charge the public, then this doesn't cover it. Then you should recuse yourself if you're making decisions related to Rocket Mortgage. Real property interest, the 500-foot rule. There's a presumption that if a project that you're voting on is within 500 feet of the property that you own, there's a presumption of a conflict. There's a presumption of a conflict on a 1,000-foot rule. If the decision hinges the vote on potential, this rarely happens in our environment here, but the laws do exist. Here again, we do go to the public at large exception. So, for example, street improvements that are just done as part of a project in a city do not trigger an exception or refusal just because they happen to be somewhere around one of the council members' houses. And so because the public general exception does apply.
Question on that. So on the real property interests and the rules, I've been to city council meetings, and again, it happens more at council meetings than ours, mm-hmm. when they're talking about property or there's zoning or something that affects a property. But there's been times where council members are neighbors, and three people on the council are not allowed to vote, but you need a majority of vote, right? Or they have to like draw a straw or something to break that tie.
It's called a rule of necessity.
Yeah.
And it has happened in my jurisdictions. So we put all the names in the hat. People draw it out of the hat. And one of those conflicted persons gets to sit there. They can't deliberate or vote, mm-hmm. but they can make a quorum. They can sustain a quorum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It rarely happens, but it does happen. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. Gifts. My rule on gifts when I speak to public officials, just don't take any. It's the bottom line. There are limits and exceptions, but it's very rarely do you receive a gift from somebody without any expectation of something in return in your position. I'm not talking about family or friends, but mm-hmm. if people come to you with gifts, beware. The rules allow you to receive a gift under $50 without reporting it. Anything over $50 has to be reported to the FPPC. There's a form that should report it. The limit from a single source is $630 a year. That changes from time to time. It went up It was 575, I think, 2 years ago. It's now 630. So they do increase it. If you receive gifts over that, and we actually had a situation with one of our clients recently, where because we hosted two Aqua dinners, and they brought their spouse to both of those dinners, it triggered the, at that time, I think it was the 575 rule. And we had to actually recalculate, because we average it up. We take the bill and divide it by number of people. And generally, I think sometimes we now ask whether or not you had alcohol, and that also affects the reporting that we ask you to do. And we actually had to sit down and figure out exactly what, and put that person under. And I had to communicate with FPPC. And fortunately, they understood, and there was no issue. But it can be very embarrassing and upsetting. I mean, you get a letter like that from FPPC that you violated, you know, gift provisions, and your own firm is someone who led you astray. So we've changed some we do in the letters, we list the amount, and we even list the total, you know, what the total is for the year, but we didn't add them up. So we have fixed that. So if rock up winners, for those who view what, then you'll see the letters, probably the last one should have had it. We'll kind of keep track for you of where you are on that issue.
And MWD has changed the rules on their MWD tours because of that. For so if a spouse goes with a director on an MWD inspection tour, that's reported differently than it used to be.
Yeah. As an individual, that do we have to report it for ourselves, or is it considered educational value as well?
I think you have to pay for your spouse.
I don't know what Matt does, but
So a tour that is a function of their role on the board that's paid for by MEF is not constitute a gift.
Right. But if there's a meal included in it, then more than likely that constitutes a
But, you know, Met does give us a letter saying we estimate the value of this at XYZ. Mm-hmm. So we do get, if you go on a Met tour, you get that letter.
Right. And if it's over $50, you need to report it.
Yeah.
It's just.
And the reporting, I believe, is Form 700.
Right.
By the way, which is due April 1st.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you need help with that, you should be able to do it online now. But if you need help, check with Vanessa.
Public general inspection, again, a reasonably foreseeable material effect on a financial interest does not create a conflict under the Act if the officials of interest is indistinguishable, easy for me to say, from the effect on the public generally. So in other words, it's the measurement, at least in jurisdictions from boundary, is 15% of the population. If that is met, then the financial interest, it triggers an exception to the financial interest rule, the public generally exception. When you do recuse yourself or disqualify yourself from the, and this, let's see, yeah, there we go. Will it play? Push the, yeah, there we go. That's it. If you have a disqualifying interest, or you recuse yourself, you need to step down from the dais and leave the room. Actually, I think it's an AG opinion, not a court opinion, that the presence of a member of the legislative body in the room is sufficient influence to create basically influence the decision. So the rule says you need to step out. There's one exception to that. We'll come to it in a minute. There's obviously no voting. You should not discuss the matter with other members. And you obviously don't count towards the quorum unless there is a rule of necessity that is evoked. The leave the room rule It is, as we discussed, you need to you need to step out. You can, there's an exception to that, come to the podium after you leave and speak to the board, to the body about how whatever the decision is that you recuse yourself from affects you personally as a resident, as a member of the public. I highly, highly advise my legislative bodies not to do that. And as an example of that, again, it's public information because it was a FPPC fine. I had a council member in the city of Grover Beach. I was there 14 years, 15 years on contract. And he had a disqualifying interest. He stepped down and said, "I'm going to come back and talk about it." I said, "Don't do it." I said, you're passionate about the issue. I said, "If you can limit it to, you know, this is what the rule says, but you're going to step over the line, you know, just don't do it." So get up there. $1,400 later, he got fined. it's best not to sit on the fence or straddle the line. At the end of the day, it's not worth it. Obviously, penalties, decisions could be invalidated. There's a loss of office is a tough one. I know they list it as one, but, the body, if you're criminally convicted, then yeah, you will more than likely lose the office. But the misdemeanors or jail time penalties, costs, attorney's fees, all those things, and most of all, it's embarrassing. Having that type of situation occur is not something that anybody, I think, wants. Upon reflection, 1090. It's every lawyer's nightmare. 1090 is unforgiving, and it basically says that a legislative body cannot enter into a contract that benefits any of its members. And it's not a recusal. It's not a I'll step down and not participate. It's a flat out prohibition. The contracts entered in that manner are void. I will give you an example of one of my jurisdictions, this King City. This will be the city attorney there. When I got there, we had a city hall had broken, the window was broken. So somebody, said, "Oh yeah, I know, you know, council member so and so will take care of that." Curious, you know, what how are we gonna do? Oh, she has the glass shop in town, and she puts the glass in, doesn't charge us any profit, just costs.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You can't have a contract with. We ended up sending it out for an opinion, and even though the next closest glass shop was in Salinas, which is a solid 45-minute drive from King City, probably longer if you drive the speed limit, the FPPC said no. You cannot have a contract with a business owned by a council member, even though if she doesn't profit from it, just entering into a contract, that contract is prohibited. So we started getting our windows from Salinas after that.
That includes like family members, like if your father had a development company.
Yes, if it's a close family member, yes, the testing point on that is there a benefit? Is there a financial interest to you? In other words, if it's your estranged father, you haven't seen him in 20 years, and you don't care one way or the other, you don't speak to each other. Yeah, no. But if it's somebody who is in your everyday life, and it can be shown that this could be beneficial. I mean, it's that would be really fact intensive, depending on the benefit has to flow to the council member, to the member of the legislative body, to the director. But certainly a spouse or a child, you had a contract with a child that was under 18, but maybe for performing, I don't know, at some events. Basically, if there is a direct or indirect interest, it's prohibited. And it does, by the way, apply to not only legislative members of the legislative body, also applies to employees, department heads, the executive level employees. Future employment prohibition, the revolving door, we talked about that. You can't represent people for pay in front of the body that you are a member of for 1 year. Senate Bill 707, which is we're going to talk a little bit about the new laws. It updates open meeting laws to access and, you know, increase accessibility and participation. Applies to local governments, or not all of them. And it does become effective in July of this year. State remains exempt. It is absolutely amazing. And I chuckle every time I talk about this. The Brown Act, which was put into effect by an assemblyman in the 50s, Ralph Brown. The whole transparent government, you know, business of the people has to be done in front of the people, applies to every single public agency except the state. So, you know, it's funny. At least I think so. Let's see, we will get into more detail on this. Expanded teleconferencing rules. A eligible legislative body must provide an opportunity for members of the public to attend all open public meetings via two-way telephonic and audiovisual platform. There are details sort of the internet service goes down, you have to wait for an hour, try to fix it. If you can't fix it, you can move forward with the meeting. Eligible body, as far as we are concerned, my reading of it is that eligible is a board of directors of a special district that has an internet website and meets with any of the following conditions. Boundaries of a special district include the entirety of the county with a population of 600,000 or more. That's obviously not. And district has 200 full-time employees. District has over 1,000 full-time employees. Special district has annual revenues based on most recent blah, 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 in excess of $400 million, adjusted annually for inflation. So based on my reading, This new law is not applicable to our district. Reasonable translation assistance. Again, there's a requirement that the agenda, not the agenda packet, is available in a language that's spoken by 20% of the population. So in the areas that are not predominantly, but that have a substantial either Latin population or Asian population, the requirement is that the agenda itself be posted in those languages. We talked about the technical disruption. You got an hour to try to fix the problem. If you can't, then you can continue the meeting. If there is, a reason to continue. In other words, if all you have left is just reports and things that aren't time sensitive or need to be done, then you adjourn the meeting and move them to the next meeting. The eligible legislative body must take following steps to promote public participation in meetings. System for electronic acceptance and fulfilling requests for meeting agendas, create and maintain accessible internet web page dedicated to public meetings, general explanation of meeting process, calendar with date and time, location of each meeting, agendas for each meeting posted, make reasonable efforts to invite groups that do not traditionally participate, The body retains broad discretion in its reasonable efforts. No action shall be taken against the body for failing to provide such information to any specific group. Because that's an open door for some group to say, we're a group and you didn't send us anything. Or you made no efforts to include us. So I think that one is attempting to be all inclusive and by its nature becomes almost all exclusive. We talked about financial training expansion of AB 1234. AB 1234 is the two-hour requirement for ethics and Brown Act. SB 827, new bill, it will add, first of all, department heads to the ethics training and also creates a two-hour fiscal and financial training requirement, which we talked about before we started. We're covering the new bills that cover that may be applicable to us. Local governments are prohibited from adopting or enforcing local ordinances that penalize individuals or organizations for providing support services related to basic survival needs. This is directed at any legislation against homelessness, anything that would authorize a public agency to basically prohibit or penalize organizations for trying to help people who are in need, helpless, homeless, or in need of basic services. Short-term rental facilitator act, another new law, basically allows local agencies to receive or compel information about Airbnbs, the hosts, and basically it's directed at collecting transient occupancy tax. If you're renting a room or a house on Airbnb for less than 30 consecutive days, you are required to collect transient occupancy tax, just like a hotel room. Mm-hmm. And then turn it over to the city that you're in or a county that you're in if you're in an unincorporated area. Obviously, that is very, very difficult to enforce by a public agency. So this bill is designed to improve the ability of public agencies to enforce and collect that TOT. I don't know if you ever done Airbnb for around a month, but it becomes a lot cheaper to rent it for 40 days and leave whenever you want to, or for 35 days than it is to rent it for 25 days and pay the TOT. Because whether or not the Airbnb owner is honest, but they charge you the tax, what they do with it, I don't know. But we had that instance in Salt Lake City, where we rented a house for a month and it, we were like at 29 days because we're trying to fit into the calendar. And she said, if you don't rent it for 30 days, 31 days, she said, I have to charge you this much more. This deals with public contracts and infrastructure. There's an ability to streamline basically large projects by doing construction manager, general contractor kind of deliveries, a little bit like design build, but a little bit different.
And this is something MWD advocated for, this change in the law, so specifically so they could expedite pure water contracting under the pure water project, but they can use it for other things now too.
Right. And it's good for next 6 years, 5 years, and it does allow for 15 projects to be included under it. Social media, SB 707 allows members of legislative body to use internet-based social media platforms to engage with the public on matters within their jurisdiction, as long as they don't talk to each other. And talking to each other means even sending an emoji or a thumbs up or yay or boohoo or whatever. So you are allowed to communicate with the public on the internet under these new laws, but don't communicate with each other in any way, shape, or form. So don't jump on somebody else's feed, because that would create a potentially a communication.
So on a social media platform, if a director posts something,
mm-hmm.
Then another director should not repost that or give any indication they agree with.
Not on that feed. And I'm a social media moron. I'll admit that immediately. I have a Facebook page. I don't remember last time I looked at it. But if another director wants on their feed to post a message about that and you know continue the conversation with their constituents, I guess that's fine. But they should not meet. Yeah, three of you should not meet, and that's the risk because it creates a quorum. And again, being really careful with your social media presence is really, really important. I mean, there's a case out of Georgia, actually not too long ago, about 5 years ago, where a supervisor, like the county board of supervisors, blocked somebody on their Facebook page. Somebody who was harassing them, you know, just doing a lot, you know, a lot of political kind of the usual stuff. She blocked them. 16 minutes later, she unblocked them. It doesn't say whether she talked to somebody or she came to her senses or whatever. He sued, and the court gave him damages. They gave him. Hate when I lose a word. Exemplary damages. In other words, they penalized the supervisor. Deprivation of the First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. If your social media presence creates a public forum. In other words, you on your web page, you start talking about the business of the district. Then it becomes a public forum. So you can't unfriend people, you can't block people, you have to sit there and whatever comes your way is what you ask for. Again, same thing with cell phones. Ideally, we should each carry two cell phones. Very few people do, one for business, one for personal, and because what you conduct on your cell phone is subject to a public record act request. The current law requires the district just to ask you. I have a feeling as time goes on, that law is going to change. District is going to be required to do more than just ask. We might be required to obtain your phone and check. So same thing on social media. I'm the last one who should talk about how to conduct yourself on social media, technically speaking. But if you can establish two entities, one, you're a public entity, this is I'm director of the district, and then your personal stuff where you all do all your family things and things like that, that would prevent you from not being able to block somebody that you want to block, not maybe potentially because they're disagreeing with how you're voting on issues or what you're doing here at the district, but because they're your next door neighbor and they're being an idiot, but if possible, keep those things apart.
The same thing applies to your email address, and I encourage you to try and, I know it's a hassle to try and manage multiple emails, but to use the district's email account for district business and keep your personal email account completely separate from that, because if there's a public records request,
mm-hmm.
your personal email account is subject to disclosure.
And again, it's an ask. The district would ask you. You have any emails that pertain to the subject matter?
Mm-hmm.
You are by law you're obligated to produce them. It's becoming more and more of a very very transparent way of going about this business. Whatever you land on the equation, whether it's too transparent or not transparent enough, and people will argue both sides with vigor, that's where we're going. Public wants to be sitting on this side of the dais. They don't want to make the decisions, but they want to, you know, they want to know everything that's going on. And the trend is that that's that's going to be allowed. With that, I'll take any questions, other questions you may have. Thank you for your patience on this. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Any questions or discussions?
Thank you. Thank you, Martin.
Okay. And Director, by my stopwatch, it's 45 minutes.
All right.
Awesome. Well, seeing no further questions or discussion, that concludes that item. Moving on to number 9, press releases and new news articles. They're in our packets. Number 10, attorney's report.
Thank you. Madam President,
directors, we've done work on review of the Bell Burnett contract. I think that's Steve talked about a consulting agreement. Again, a lot of discussion about the muscle hearing and back and forth. Conflict waiver recommendations. We've worked with staff on that. And then agenda packets and finalizing the PowerPoint presentation to for tonight's event. Thank you.
Thank you. Engineers report, Steve.
Thank you, Madam President. Sure. Just the projects we're working on, a little update. We've eliminated some that have been completed, so it's just a short report. For the IRP update, we did report at a previous meeting that through some discussion, we decided to add impacts of the Golden Mussel to the IRP, impacts on water supply. We met on the 21st and reviewed that, and I think that's been completed, so it's pretty much ready to go. River Water Management Plan, it's underway. We're working on the River Water Management 2025 River Water Management Plan. Draft is scheduled to be done in April, be provided for further review. Final plan is due to DWR July 1, 2026. A presentation was provided to the Water Resources and Facility Management Committee Monday night of this week. Yeah, we had people stand, and I think Jim showed up for that. Golden Mussel Control Plan, I think Tom is going to report on that. We have some information, not great, but we have some. NWD reports, nothing new to report. San Gabriel County Water District, Sunny Slope, nothing new to report. Upper District work's pretty much done on those. I'll probably take those off and not report those going forward, since we're waiting for them to come back. It's really in their hands. Let's see. Emergency response plan, pretty much done.
Yeah, we can take that off the way.
Take that one off of it, too. So things are getting done. Reactivation, Metropolitan Interconnection, UHC-7, we'll see Monrovia. Monrovia. Again, pretty much up to this report done. It's in their hands. We're waiting for them to get back. That's what we're working on.
Awesome.
Thank you,
Steve. General Manager's report, Tom.
Yeah, in addition to what's in my written report, I'll let Director Fellow talk about MWD and the last 2 days, which were eventful. But I did want to mention that as part of our team building, we had a staff outing yesterday, and I had an entire staff join me at the MWD board meeting. And when I did my public comment, I acknowledged their presence. So I think that was fun for you. We had lunch at Felipe's. I had a tuna salad sandwich. I did not have a French dip, which is,
I know,
but I didn't have a pickled egg. Yeah. So it was really fun. I hope the staff enjoyed that. I had a note to remind you of your Form 700. Lastly, I will be attempting to terminate a cost-sharing agreement we have with Foothill Municipal Water District for consulting services. It's Acquiesce is the name of the firm, but the individual is Jeff Keitlinger. So we'll be terminating that agreement. I've just talked to Martin about the termination clause for that agreement, but we will be terminating that. And it does have to do with advocacy regarding the Pure Water Southern California project. That's all I have.
So, well, I was going to ask where you took them to eat, so I'm happy to hear that. Metropolitan report.
Yes, I was very happy to see the entire upper staff, district staff, that met and they all stood up. That was very nice. I have quite a lengthy report, and maybe Tom can give you some information that I've left out. But today I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the background of the MWD's budget environment. This is the MWD budget this year, 600 and 80s.
A lot.
And the process has begun yesterday. And the 24th, there'll be a workshop. And unfortunately, Tom and myself, we'll be in Washington, D.C., but hopefully we'll watch it. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the background of this budget environment, and then talk a little bit about the director's first action yesterday, Monday and yesterday, on the budget. And let's look at the environment right now. And probably most of you know this stuff, but for some background, Metropolitan is faced with some critical decisions over the near future on the matter of what water resources are needed to meet future demands. And three major water resource projects are under development and consideration: Sites Reservoir, Delta Conveyance, and Pure Water Southern California. And each of these projects are contemplated to bolster water supply availability to Southern California. And each of these projects will have capital costs in the billions of dollars and will take years to build. MWD's water sales have declined over the last 20 years as a result of several factors, primarily water conservation initiatives. Another factor in declining sales has been a leveling off in population growth in the MWD service territory. And industrial water consumption also has declined as a result of water-intensive industries moving away from Southern California. Today, MWD's annual deliveries to 26 major agencies is approximately 1.34 million acre feet per year. This annual water use is down from 2.0 million acre feet delivered in 2010. MWD, as you know, has two primary sources from which it imports water to Southern California. One is the Colorado River, and the second is the California State Water Project. MWD has an entitlement of 1.35 million acre feet annually from the Colorado River, and the supply from the State Water Project varies annually from 2.0 million acre feet in a good year water to 0.25 million acre feet in drought water years. The Metropolitan Water District is entitled from the Colorado River about 0.25 million acre feet in drought years. Oh, excuse me, is entitled from the Colorado River, has numerous rules and regulations that are dependent on the status of water storage levels at Lake Powell and Lake Mead and hydrological conditions in the Colorado watershed. Likewise, the water available from the State Water Project is highly dependent on hydrological conditions in the American River watershed in Northern California. The long-term average amount of water delivered by the State Water Project is 0.7 million acre feet annually. However, in recent years, there were conservative years of near zero water delivered by the State Water Project to MWD. The lack of water from the State Water Project has caused a number of MWD member agencies serious problems, requiring them to enact drought contingency measures. And this situation resulted in significant financial distress for these agencies, along with unhappy customers who did not receive the reliable water service which they had come to expect. There are demographic factors that need to be taken into consideration in arriving at answers to water resource adequacy in Southern California. The growth trajectory of Southern California appears to have flattened in recent years. What will the next 25 years look like population-wise? Water use on per capita basis has been on a steady decline. How does this trend impact future water needs? Climate variability is another factor in decisions about the need for additional water resources for Southern California. So the big question that needs to be answered is what should MWD plan for resource-wise in order to be in a good position to meet the agency's mission statement? And that statement, again, is the mission of the Metropolitan Water District is to provide its service area with adequate and reliable supplies of high-quality water to meet present and future needs in an environmentally and economically responsible way. Simply, MWD is being asked to make multi-billion-dollar, multi-decade supply investments at a time when demand growth is weak, per capita use is still falling, and hydrologic risk is rising. The planning question is therefore not how much more water can we build, but rather what portfolio of supplies best satisfy MWD's mission, adequacy, reliability, and economic responsibility under deep uncertainty. Secondly, let's look at what happened the past few days at MWD as the biennial budget summary of 2026-27 and fiscal year 2027-28. Right now, Metropolitan for 2025-27 appropriations is about $2.71 billion dollars, and it comprises of operations, expenditures for operations, debt service expenses, capital investment plans, and the AVAC participation rights. And AVAC is a water banking agreement to provide for the financial of certain costs of construction. MWB gets its sources of funds, as you know, from taxes, income, interest income, power sales, fixed charges, the San Diego County Water Exchange, stored water sales, and bond proceeds. Directors are concerned, and rightly so, about the big projects items such as Pure Water, Sites Reservoir, and the State Water Project. Each project is billions of dollars. Moving on to top of these are two major issues. The first issue is the Colorado River. How much of that water will California and MWD get in the next 6 to 20 years as the seven Western states fight for water? Things are not good on the Colorado, the seven states that are grappling with this right now. The deadline is Saturday, Valentine's Day, which the president wants the upper and lower basin states to come to some decisions. And we don't know if he'll extend that deadline or he will inject his own plan of what to do with the Colorado River. The second big issue, and it's a big issue, is the aging infrastructure, which will cost millions to repair or renew MWD's infrastructure. San Marino Director Mayor Gretchen Shepherd Romney said that Monday, this may be the number one issue for Metropolitan. She said, without MWD's infrastructure, there is no MWD or workable MWD. In addition, MWD needs some 86 new employees in the assistant GM Shane Chapman's operation division. Further complicating the budget process is MWD's quest for a new business model. That is a model that would provide MWD with more of a fixed income. And we at MWD have not done a good job in this category. If you look at the history of MWD rate increases, which we saw yesterday and Monday, you'll see certain spikes instead of increases as the years went on, like Edison does. And directors did bring up that perhaps MWD needs to have had a structure where, and I've advocated this for years, where like Edison, water rates are increased every year. And I think that's something we'll have to look at. With this background, MWD took up the 600-page budget Monday and Tuesday, and we'll have the first workshop on the current budget the last week of February, and this will continue until April when a vote is taken by the board. With this background, MWD took up the first project, Pure Water, this week. At the Engineering Operations and Technology Committee, it was item 8.1, an action item to certify the final environmental impact report and take related CEQA actions and approve Pure Water of Southern California for CEQA purposes. It was not a vote to approve the project at all. Staff recommendation was to approve the action item, and rightly so. However, a director said MWD has a lot too much on his plate. And as I explained to you, and what we've been grappling with is the cost of these projects. I spoke that day that we need to move ahead on Pure Water past the original motion. And also it was a slap in the face to our new GM because he wanted the original motion passed that we begin the EIR process and get it out of the way. So politics played a heavy role. And I spoke to my director friends, Camacho, who's the vice chair, Juan Garza of Central Basin, and Mr. Gold, Dr. Gold, who supported me on this. But we lacked the votes, and it went out of committee without the original motion being approved. But overnight, things took place. And it's good to have a director with longevity at Met and has friends at Met. But through the work of Mr. Camacho, Mr. Garza, and myself, the board did pass the original motion yesterday. It was kind of a miracle in some respects, but it was passed. So we won the first battle, but the budget has a long way to go. But I just wanted to give you a background of what's going on. There's a lot of projects. And the fear of MWD right now, and I've asked the past year, I want a listing of all the projects, how much water we'll get from these projects, and how much money it will cost. And I'm still waiting for answers, though some have come. But these are high-powered projects. But also, too, as Chair Don Ortega has told us, these are not going to all come online at one time. It's going to take years. And so I'm so happy about yesterday. And this morning, I got a lot of good letters from the Sierra Club and the tribal partnerships and who supported that measure. So we were happy yesterday.
Very, very much so. And I just have a couple of real quick notes on the budget. Their overall rate increase they're proposing in the draft budget is 9.5% per year for the next 2 years. That's what they adopt. They adopt a 2 year rate increase. Their projection for the next 10 years with at least a certain size of implementation of pure water is 9% per year for the remaining 2 years. So substantial rate increases. So we did provide to our producers this morning, our customers this morning, Met staff were online and presented the Met draft budget to the producers, so they're aware of what's coming. Again, it's draft and things can change. And this is really important, timely, because Water Master is considering adjusting the resource development assessment that they collect to buy water. As the Met rates go up, they can buy less water unless they increase that assessment. So that's underway, and the producers have been informed, and we'll continue to work with them. We do plan to have workshops, both with the board, our board, and producers on the MWD proposed rates and the upper water budget and rates as well. Go forward. Secondly, on the Pure Water Southern California, I haven't experienced that at Metropolitan from a day of a committee taking action on a motion that we really didn't agree with and we got more than we hoped for. We got what we wanted, but I didn't think we'd get what we wanted entirely, but we got what we wanted on a clean, we call it a clean EIR, approval of an EIR without qualifications or conditions. So that was a big win. I want to thank Patty. She did a tremendous job with getting letters, resolutions of support from a number of entities, agencies, both business, NGOs, water interests and others, including the Council of Governments. So those were presented to the Met Board, and it was a big step forward. There's a lot more work to do on pure water, a lot more really difficult decisions that the Met Board was going to have to make.
A lot of things take place under closed door. But that night, that day after that vote, I was very upset and went to a Michael Camacho and Juan Garza, and I said, this cannot be. We need it in the San Gabriel Valley. And Michael said, tomorrow you'll get your way, Tony. And it happened.
Thank you, Director Fellin. Also, congratulations on your five years. You were honored at the meeting. So
it was nice to have all the staff there when I got my 35-year pin, was it? I don't think it was 35 years, but
it's been a long time. hopefully they cheered for you out in the wings. But water quality report. Or Water Quality Authority report, Director Chavez.
Yes, the report's in the packet, but I just want to add that the board went through the reorganization and reappointed all existing officers, as well as making the same committee appointments as last year. So Linda Noriega will continue to be the chairwoman for the authority. That's my report.
Awesome. Thank you. Water Master report, Justin Nakano.
If you have not met Justin, will you come up? We've got the microphone over there. So if you have not met Justin has been recently on board with Water Master. He comes from the Chino Basin Water Master as the new manager of water resources.
Director of water resources.
We want to welcome Justin to the groundwater basin that truly has peace. he will know what that reference is into.
I've heard many good things. Good evening, Madam President, fellow directors. Just want to give a couple updates coming from the Water Master. On February 6th, the Baldwin Park Key Well groundwater elevation was 262.1 feet That's an increase of about 9/10 of a foot compared to the prior week. The combined storage behind Cogswell, San Gabriel, and the Morris Dam was 46,093 acre feet, which is about 55% of any capacity. Inflow to the San Gabriel Reservoir was about 294 CFS, and the release was about 500 as of February 10th. And in the Morris Reservoir, inflow was 465 CFS with a release of 500 CFS also on February 10th. I'd also like to update you that for under our water quality, basin-wide groundwater quality monitoring program, during January 26th, 49 wells were sampled, and during December 2025, 22 wells were sampled under the Title 22. That concludes my update.
Thank you so much. AB 1234 compliance report. The report is included in our packets. Would any director like to add to the report? All right, thank you. The director's comments. Director Tribune.
Yeah, a couple of things. There was a very spirited committee meeting in Metropolitan yesterday. I think it went on for almost 3 hours, probably 3 hours. And very strong opinions from different board members. Don, you walked in almost at the end of that meeting with your backpack and everything. But there's been some very spirited discussions at Metropolitan regarding where they're going with this. And also there's some also very discussion between the employees, Metropolitan, and among themselves and the particular groups that represent the employees at Metropolitan. But I just, you know, I take my hat off to Tony and other directors there. They really put in the time to get some things done over there. And, you know, I really enjoyed that. Yesterday's meeting, like I said, it's from, I think 8:30 to 11:30 or something like that. It was a long meeting. Got a chance to talk to Dr. Camacho and a few other folks there. So yeah, it's my hat's off to Metropolitan directors.
Thank you for that comment. And it is a very intelligent board. You know,
very committed also to getting things done.
You know, what's interesting is, as I mentioned, each year we talk about our rate structures, and it was Dr. Pressman who came up and he said, look at the spikes, you know, and that happened during droughts. We raise our rates, and then it goes way down. We don't do anything. Yeah. And we really, it would be amazing. They told me yesterday, you can't go back and think of these things, but what if we continued the past 15 years or 20 years with a rate increase? It doesn't have to be large, you know.
But it needs to be.
And we would be, because that's what Edison does. I don't know if you remember, Charles, but at one time we even thought about, because Edison hands out lots of money to the legislature. And we were talking years ago, maybe we need a special unit outside of Met that will collect money to give to legislators so we can get it. But it fell apart because it's very difficult. But yesterday was a difficult, Monday was difficult.
Monday was also very spirited also.
And Tom writes to me too, he better be.
Make this motion.
But it was good, yeah, we're good people.
Anything else you want
to know? Yeah, that's it.
All right, Dr. Charles?
No comments.
Director Fellow, or just me, sorry. Director Santana online.
Thank you. I wanted to ask Director Fellow, thank you so much for your report, and Tom as well. Was there any mention of the off-ramps? I know that was brought up a while back regarding the Delta conveyance. How is that going?
There's no off-ramps right now, I don't think, but there will be.
So the two issues, Pure Water and Delta Conveyance, and this is important, a really good question. In the fall of 2024, the MWD pulled $146 million for additional planning money to the Delta Conveyance project. And the board and their approval for that added what they called off ramps, so that if the Department of Water Resources didn't meet certain milestones by a certain time, MWD could pull the funding. And so that was the off ramps. But it's interesting you bring this up, because some of the directors, maybe not in the meetings this week, Matt, have talked about off ramps for the Pure Water Southern California project, which I find really interesting, because if they want to use the road forward analogy, Pure Water isn't even on the frontage road yet. I mean, they got on ramps. The decisions the Met Board needs to make to put that project on a path for implementation. And excuse the cute analogy about on ramps versus off ramps, but you're absolutely right. The subject of off ramps on Pure Water has come up with Met Board members in the last couple of months.
All right, very good.
There's a lot of off ramps with the Bay Delta.
Yeah,
that's another problem. And Colorado River right now is very problematic. It's talked to Bill Hazenkamp and Shanti Rossetti. It is chaos. He said in all his years, he's never, during the original quantification agreement in the Clinton administration, I did a column, and it was just pure, everybody loved each other, and it was done quickly. This, the upper states, the lower states, Arizona, it is a mess. And he says, I've never seen anything like this. And they have till Saturday. I don't know why, if Trump picked Valentine's Day, he should get this done.
Director Santana, anything else you want to add, Director Santana?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you, Director Fellow. Director
and then Fellow. Another, just to add, some good things are being done too. The St. Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District, I was thinking of them, the Garvey Reservoir going very well, the new top,
mm-hmm.
That's a big thing. And I'm going to be speaking to some of our municipal groups that are not in Met about the budget and like St. Gabriel Valley and Valley County, and what's giving them an update on what's going on. But it's amazing how things get done with all these problems. And happy Valentine's Day.
And I have no comments. So any future agenda items? Seeing none. Martin, is there a need for closed session?
No, I think at this point in time, there's no updates or discussions that we would like to have with the board. So,
correct. No new information on that subject.
Yep.
Are there any other business matters? All right, seeing none, the meeting's adjourned.